We are now in lecture two. Another technique in learning to listen within to achieve inner peace and wisdom. I sit in calmness at the dramatic seashore or the quietness of the park-like areas or at the gurgling stream and let its noisy confusion calm my attention. We are interested in using meditation to unlock our inner wisdom. How do we go about using meditation to unlock our inner wisdom? How do we step into it? We use within us, we have our, as we are learning, our conscious mind and our subconscious mind. And the subconscious operates everything in our body. The conscious is our choices that we make. Now, we've all been asking how we get into the inner to be aware of what the subconscious is doing. But I say to you, all you have to do is look about you and you see what the subconscious is doing. If you have a happy life, your subconscious is performing, giving you happiness and bringing happiness into your world. If you have unhappiness, then your subconscious is bringing that into your world. If you are a pleasant person, your subconscious is making you a pleasant person. If you're an unpleasant person, your subconscious is making you an unpleasant person. If you are a poor person, your subconscious is making you a poor person. If you're a rich person, your subconscious is making you a rich person. And on and on. Okay, now, well, Herb, that's putting all the blame on the subconscious. That's right. It puts all the blame on the subconscious right where it belongs. You know how the statement is? Didn't your mother ever teach you anything? Didn't your mother ever tell you what the rules of conduct are? How to be a good neighbor, how to be a good friend, how to be a good mother, how to be a good father? Didn't your mother ever tell you that, your subconscious? Didn't your world ever tell you what would make it go around beautiful? Didn't it? Did you ever wonder what makes the world go around beautiful? Well, we should really wonder that. And we know. We know what makes the world go around. We know that O.K. here had a mother and a father that told him, "Son, go and be yourself and have fun." And he says, "Yes, Mom, yes, Mom, yes, Dad." You are responsible for all your actions. All the experiences that take place in your life, you're responsible. "Hey, that's not fair, you know." Well, you are. "Well, you taught me to do different things, and sometimes when I do things that you taught me to do, they're not too good." What did we ever teach you to do that is not too good? "Well, you taught me to be humble to all the kids. You taught me to not push other people around. You taught me not to let other people tell me how to live my life, you know." And the people who let other people tell them how to live their life, they get along just fine. They do what they want to do, but they get along just fine. But when I do what you told me to do, then I have trouble. Well, do you want to be the type of person that does what you want to do that makes you happy, or do you want to be the kind of person that makes Sybil happy? Sybil doesn't know beans about you. She doesn't even know you're born yet. She doesn't even know that you're into this or that. Sybil's not the one. Sybil does one thing. What does Sybil do?
She has her last one.
Me, what does Sybil do?
So I am myself.
Sybil says, "I am myself and I have fun." See, Sybil says that. Now, Sybil, what do you say about him? Sybil, what do you say about him?
He is himself and has
fun. No, he's none of my business.
Okay.
He's none of my business, you know?
What he is his business.
All you do is look at O.K. over here and see him as a reflection of you. And if he's a good man, it's because you're a good woman. If he's a bad man, it's because you're a bad woman. So if you're a good woman, how do you see him?
He's my reflection.
You see him good.
Good.
We just said he's your reflection, but you see him good. Now, when you don't see him good, what does that mean about you?
You are not good.
You have some homework to do. Mm-hmm. You have some house cleaning to do. You have some work to do with your subconscious. In your subconscious, now can you look at okay, and what do you see when you look at okay? Do you see a man of integrity, a man of genius, a man of dignity, a man of wealth, a man of three fabulous, super, magnificent kids? Huh? Yes?
Yep. Yes.
Well, what enthusiasm. Holy cow.
You're asking her what she sees.
Yeah, but I asked you just now. It's you. Now, do you have the most wonderful wife in the world?
Yes, I do.
Do you ever plan to replace her?
No.
What would you do if you ever chose to get married again? Would you replace your wife?
No.
What would you do? You'd live in the now. Yeah. You'd have, if you chose to marry again, you'd live in the now.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say, hey, you're not like my wife. You're not. My wife used to do this. My wife was the greatest. There. And they don't want to hear that. They want to live in the now with you. Now, could you do that? If you chose to.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily choose to, but if you chose to. Oh, there's a lot of women got their hooks out for you because you're a good catch.
Yeah, I have no hooks for them.
But you're a good catch because you like yourself. You're a good catch because you think that you are the kind of person that everybody likes. You're the kind of person that is a good person, that's a wise person, that's intelligent, and all the good things we said. Now, right?
Yeah. I like myself.
So. That's exactly right. Yeah. Now, when you like yourself, everything in your life goes beautiful. Everything in your life goes great. Now, why is it that women feel you're a good catch? They feel you're a good catch because you know you're a good catch. And because you find it amusing to see women running after you. You find that amusing. But the thing is, they're earnest. When they're running after you, they mean they want to find a catch. Now, what do you do when they make a proposal like saying, don't you think it'd be cheaper if we lived together? What do you do when they make such a proposal to you? Do you say to them...
Cheaper for who?
Huh?
I say cheaper for who?
No. You know better than that. You say, having you as a very special friend, and as a very personal friend, wonderful friend, is to me a cherished experience. Having you as a personal friend. Now, many women ask me to get married too, and I say, thank you very much. I say, you do me a great honor. I mean, I'm honored that you would think that I'd make a good husband, but I'm not interested in tying myself down at any time to the responsibility of being a husband for someone. Because if you're a husband, that means you got to come home at night. You got to come home and you got to tell people when you're leaving and coming. You got to let other people know what your plans are. And I don't plan it. I have three women right now that I have to tell what I'm coming and going. I mean, that's just on campus.
Yes.
And then here I got now three more women, you know, that want to know what my plans are and what I'm going to do. And that's good. That's fine. But no possession. No possession. I tell Chrissy, I say, I want to take a nap on your bed. She says, okay. Well, she knows she's not included in that nap. And she's not worried about being included in that nap. She loves me for my philosophical mind and for my personality and so forth, but she's not interested in my body whatsoever. And that's great. But you see, the thing is, I like me. Therefore, everybody else likes me too. Oh, people might want to change me, might want to do different things with me, you know. But the thing is, I like me. And that's the main thing. And that's the only thing that really counts. Because otherwise, it's not worth living if you don't like yourself. Okay, now, we've been here with Marge's situation. Your situation is that, you know, your mama and your daddy taught you some things that didn't really pay off too well, just like O.K.'s parents did to him. And you had to live with it. But your mother and your father said to you, you are the greatest girl in the world. You are the most beautiful girl in the world. You deserve the finest boy in the world with the finest integrity in the world. You deserve the absolute best male companion for you in the whole world. When you get married, you will have the ideal husband, the ideal man in your life. And you said, but Mom, there are not many around. Well, sweetheart, it's worth waiting for. It's worth waiting for. But meanwhile, you can be a worthwhile, beautiful person and have many friends. And you have no limitation. You can have 7 boyfriends. That's one a day. For 7 days, and then next week, you can start another 7, you know, or whatever you want to do. But the thing is, what are you doing? Are you the ideal woman? Are you the ideal woman that every man would love to have as his companion, his friend? Are you the ideal woman who doesn't need anybody, who doesn't want anything, who is fulfilled within yourself? Are you the ideal person? Not only a woman, but the ideal person who is the most magnificent expression of divinity on earth. Oh, kind of cool, huh? That's what your mom and dad were talking about. They knew that you were the best, just like they knew O.K. was the best. And Chrissy and what's this word? Seville, you know. Just like they knew it. Now, just because there's a relationship here between you guys, it just goes to show that your parents, all, including O.K., and including the little jerk here, Ibube's mother says to him, Ibube, you are the ideal genius. Ibube, you are intelligent. Ibube, you are handsome. Ibube, you are good. Ibube, all the kids in school love you. Ibube, all the teachers respond to you and respect you and think that you're the super student. And Ibube says, thank you. He doesn't say, I don't want to be the ideal genius. I don't want to be this. He doesn't say that. He just says, thank you. Now, I have been sitting here now for about 5 or 10 minutes, bold-faced lying to all of you. Have I?
No.
Have I? You may speak. Have I been lying to you?
No.
Have I been lying to you? Have I been lying to you?
Why would you be lying to?
Huh?
Why would you be lying?
Oh, don't give me that. Was I lying to you?
No.
No. You're sharing the truth.
I was telling you the truth about yourself.
Yes.
It's not what I like. It's what I have to do. I have to tell you the truth about yourself because I know the truth about myself. And so I tell you the truth about yourself. Did I lie to you? No. Everybody knows that. I told you all the truth about yourself. And every one of you sat there and thought, he understands me. He knows me. He's inside of me. He's around me. He knows what I'm doing. He's understanding of all that I am. He's fantastic. Now, that's not ego or pride or anything. That's just the truth. Now, okay, you got strong shoulders, so we'll use you as this illustration now. Okay has a bad habit of picking his nose in public. You know? Okay? You're not responding at all. That's good. Okay has a bad habit of picking his nose in public. And his mother always said to him, okay, if you don't learn that picking your nose in public, or any place really, use a handkerchief. If you don't know that that's good manners, you're going to miss out on a lot of fun. Now, okay, you know how to properly clean out your nose. You know how to do it without sitting there picking, taking your finger and running up in the nostrils. You know better than that. You know. And whenever okay wants to get angry at himself, or his mother, but at himself, then he goes picking his nose. And his mother always knows when okay has lost his temper and he hasn't got control of himself because he starts picking his nose. We all do things like that. We have some little idiosyncrasy about ourselves. Now we're going to tell okay something very important for him. Okay? If you ever let somebody else push a button that is a negative button in your life, you have given them the power to own you, possess you, to control you. And that happens. Okay is driving down the road, not you. You're riding in the car. Later you're driving too. But okay is driving down the road, and somebody switches right in front of him. And somebody does dumb things around him. And he sits there. He says, "Oh, those stupid guys." Oh, he's picking his nose like crazy, you know. "Oh, those stupid guys." And then he wakes up and he says, "I'm picking my nose. Somebody's pushing my button and I'm letting him do it." Ha, ha, ha. Hey, I don't need to have that reminder. I don't need to have that reminder at all. I don't need that at all in my life. So he teaches himself by the awareness of picking his nose. Whenever he does that, he's letting somebody push his button. So then he immediately takes control. And he says, "I am."
I give. I like me.
I am
myself and I have fun.
All that stuff. I am in divine order. All is in divine order right now with the other drivers and the other things that are pushing your button. All is in divine order. He takes away their ability to push his buttons by removing the button. He takes the button right off, throws it out the window. So he's buttonless. And somebody comes along and drives in front of him, does a stupid thing. He says, "I surround you with my pure white light of love. I know you have a wonderful journey wherever you're going, and I know that you're a happy man. I know that all of your irritations are gone now, and you're at peace, and you're wonderful. And thank you for reminding me to be that way too." Now, you see, when that happens, he no longer pushes that button. He lets somebody else push that button. He no longer feels like somebody in the world has got control of him. He no longer feels that way. He feels he is in charge of himself. And that's wonderful. But, yes, all these prick words that we have, "I like me," "all is in divine order," and that sort of stuff, they're all good. But the biggest and most important one is to say that "I like me." When you say "I like me," nobody can get to you. When you say "I like me," you are in charge. You are the master. You are the one. Now, if you don't, if you just let that become, "Why does everybody pick on me?" and feel sorry for yourself. You know, we do that. And you feel sorry for yourself. "How come everybody drives crazy in front of me? Why? Well, that's because you are available. Why do the kids pick on one kid in school? Or some kids in school, because they feel sorry for themselves. If the kids would stand up and just say, "Hey, doesn't bother me. Hey, what are we doing? Join with the group. Be part of it." But no, he backs off. He's separate, or she's separate from the group, and then she acts like everybody's picking on her, and so everybody picks on her. She creates them picking on her. When a bully is in, there can be no bully in school, unless there's somebody to be bullied. And the somebody to be bullied is somebody who has an attitude that feels sorry for themselves. And then the bully goes and picks on him. I know. We have a dog. And this was Prince. And well, he's a little schnauzer that we had. And Prince is just a wonderful guy. Everybody loves him. He just a fabulous dog. On the big property, never had to be fenced in. He always did everything right. But whenever anybody came on the property, especially our handyman, when our handyman came on the property, our handyman was going through drugs at that time. and not liking himself too well. Well, Prince would go to him and growl and snap at him and bite at him, you know. And we said, Prince, don't do that. But we knew why he was doing it. And so when he came over, we'd put Prince in another room. We wouldn't let him do that because we didn't want to encourage that. But we knew that the handyman was having troubles. And he was going through this drug situation. And we knew Prince was doing it. And Prince did it with several other people. Not everybody. Now, Rex, my golden retriever, I walk around the property. And the Border Patrol comes along our property because we're on the Mexican border. And they want to pick up wetbacks or international travelers. Or they want to pick up people who are handling drugs because they're running drugs and bringing marijuana and so forth over. And Rex is with me, and we're walking along. The Border Patrol truck goes along here with two or three Border Patrol men in it and just going about their business. And Rex says, harf, harf, and then goes about his business. But when there's a Border Patrol man who has anxiety, who is worried, oh, I hope I'm not going to get shot today. I hope I don't run it. Anxiety, you know. Rex barks his head off at him. He goes at that truck and he says, all right, right, I don't want you on this property. You got bringing the wrong vibrations on this property. We don't want you here. Dogs know that. Dogs know that. And when your dog, if you have a dog, gets upset about something, figure out why. Because we figured it out with Rex. And so I would stand right in the middle of the road and the Border Patrol would have to stop. It's my road on my property anyhow. And I'd stand right in the middle and I'd go to the guys and I'd say, hey, how's your day going? And they'd say, rah, rah, rah. And I'd say, you know, my dog's a good judge of conditions. When you Border Patrol men drive by and you're happy with yourself, and you are the kind of people that are untouchable. You're just so wonderful. You're doing your job and doing a good job. Rex looks at you and barks and says, hi, barf, barf, you know. But when you guys come by, when you are so afraid of your job, you're so anxious, you're so tied up in knots yourself, he barks at you and he likes to tear you apart for being, he wants to tear you apart for being anxious, not for what you're doing, because you don't like yourself. You're afraid of yourself. Well, I don't say that to a lot of them. I avoid it. But once in a while I say it. And the guys say, yeah, I guess so. I guess. I said, hey, you Border Patrol men of all should know, when a wetback is coming across the border and wanting to come into America, and we call them international travelers. And they're coming through Mexico wanting to come in. When they come in, and they are just nice people coming to America to get a job, to have better lifestyle and so forth, you could not see them. Your dogs could not smell them because they had no fear. They had no fear in them. And so your dogs were not aware of them. And I said, and you guys are the craziest guys in the world. You don't really want to catch them. And I know that. You come here with your lights all on, your horns going, you're talking over your bullhorn to each other, you're loud and noisy. They know it. They can hide under a brush. And if they are running drugs, they're fearful. And you can tell right away where they are. And if they're not running drugs, or if they're just coming, making the trip to get a better job, and they're peaceful with themselves, you can't tell them. They lay down under a bush, and you can't tell them. You have no idea. Oh, they have machines that detect heat, you know, and they can tell if there's a body here or there, but they also can tell an animal, you know, a deer or something like that. But they read that stuff. And they said that's true. That's true. When they're anxious, they lose. They really lose. One guy that was shot at the border from drug runners, he was always afraid he'd be shot. He always said to the other guys, I'm afraid I'm going to be shot. He should have quit. But he didn't quit. He should have quit. His inner voice spoke to him, and he should have left, done something different. Okay, now, what's that got to do with your subconscious mind, your subconscious thoughts, your subconscious body? Well, your subconscious body is like the fear. Your subconscious body is like the feeling sorry for yourself. Your subconscious body responds to anything that you want it to respond to. So, what did we say about our master over here? What did we say about, okay, he's rich, he's healthy, he's happy, he's got talent, he's a genius. His mother kept telling him he's this here, and that's all he knows. Now, if someone were to come along and try to push his button, or something else, what? Oh, yes, yes, yes. Excuse me. And he's ideal. And he is ideal. Now, you see, when his mother said he was ideal, he's not going to let that be forgotten by you. When O.K.'s mother told him that he was an ideal boy, an ideal young man, and that everything he touched in his life would be a success, and every person that he touched in his life would be the most beautiful, wonderful person in the world. But when O.K. got angry one day, somebody had hurt somebody in his family, and he was angry and he wanted to get back at him. He said, why did they do that around? He lost his temper, he lost his cool, he lost his balance. And then he regained his mama. His mama's thoughts came to him and said, okay, nobody can make you feel sorry for yourself except yourself. Nobody can hurt you except yourself. Okay, cool it, relax. Okay, you can handle anything when you're balanced. Now, that attitude of his mother comes through to him whenever he has a time of challenge. Whenever he has a time of feeling unworthy or anything, that comes through to him and lifts him up. Now, that's part of his subconscious mind. That's part of his not unconscious mind, but subconscious mind. The subconscious mind is so fantastic. Now, he's reading a magazine in which there's an article about the mind. And the headline of the article about the mind says one thing. It says, we have a conscious mind that we can control. And we have a subconscious mind that we know virtually nothing about, which is far more superior, intelligent-wise and everything else, than the conscious mind could ever be. Now, what's going on in O.K.'s mind when his mother is speaking to him? And his mother is long since gone, right? 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 Okay. What's going on in his subconscious mind? He has those memory implants. He has those training implants from long before in his history. And those training implants come up at the time when they're needed. You all have them. You all have those teachings of your parents or of your teachers and so forth. And now, if your teacher ever lost her cool and said to you, yeah, Chioma, you're stupid. Chioma, you're stupid. If the teacher would ever say that to Chioma, Chioma could easily handle it, because Chioma's mother has said to her from the time she was born, Chioma, you're a genius. Chioma, you're fantastic. Chioma, you are on top of everything. And she is. And she always will be. But she had the benefit of a mother who said that to her. She had the benefit of a mother that was always teaching her to be on top of everything. And because of that, she's always been on top of everything. She has trained her daughter's subconscious mind to work at a high level, just like O.K.'s mother, and just like each of your mothers have too. They've trained you to always be a genius, to always be wonderful. Now, as I'm saying these things and using one person or another for an illustration, If for one second you have in your heart, why doesn't he talk about me? Why doesn't he say, I have the perfect mother? Why doesn't he say, I have the perfect father, the perfect teachers? Why doesn't he say that about me? Now, if you say that, what you're doing is you're complaining, feeling sorry for yourself about not having enough training and love and support from your parents. Now, I have had a lot of people who have had parents that were tough. And they felt that their parents were real tough. And they felt their parents, and they're adults now, and they felt their parents just were too tough. And I said to them, okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about who your parents are. All right, now let's just take your dad. And so we took the one girl's father. And I said, now, what kind of man is your dad? Oh, he likes flowers. He's a good man. He has three daughters, wonderful daughters. He has this life here. And he's kind of hard on all of us. He's kind of tough on us. I said, okay, I want you right now to leave me and to go outside in the car, outside in the park, go anyplace, and take a pad of paper. And I want you to give your father a new birth. I want you to have your father born again right now. I want you to create your father in your image. What do you think the ideal father is like? What does the ideal father do for the children? And we'll start it with one thing. The ideal father wants the best for his children and wants his children at all times to be acting, living, and expressing themselves as the best, as the finest. Now I said, go and write. And I've done this with many people. And so she went off and I said, don't come back until you're done. If it takes you a couple of hours, stay away, you know. So she came back an hour and a half. And she gave me her report. And she says, you know, I got a nice dad. I said, oh, really? Yeah. I said, what happened to that grouchy old guy you had before? I have no idea what you're talking about, Herb. I have no idea what you're talking about. But I have a really wonderful dad. Every time I thought of a virtue that I would delight my father having, he had it. It's just I didn't see it because I was too close. And I was too close to the train. And his technique of working with me didn't always help me to see it. But it was always there. My dad was always loving me. He was always supporting me, always lifting me up, always telling me how wonderful I was. And she said, it was great. And to this day. And had another young fellow. He felt his father had abandoned him. Because his father, when he was about 8 or 10 years old, allowed him to go and live at the neighbor who had a farm and work for him as a farmer because he wanted to learn about farming. And he could come home every night if he wanted to, but he wanted to stay at the neighbor's. He could eat with his own family, but he wanted to eat with the neighbor's. It was his choice to do all these things. Well, now he did the ride around, and in doing the ride around, he found that his father loved him with more love than he ever knew possible. His father loved him with a deeper affection than he ever knew. And he went to see his father with this new attitude of mind. Just like the girl went to see her father with a new attitude of mind. And they both found new parents that were there all the time. But they couldn't see them because they were looking at a child's eyes at somebody. Like a mother, she says to her child, don't play in the street, that's just for big cars. And so the little girl runs out and plays in the street, and the mother sees it, and the car is coming down, and she runs out and grabs the child just before the car runs over the kid. And she takes the kid and she spanks the kid and she says, "You're terrible, you're terrible. How could you do this to me? What are you trying to do here? Are you going to get yourself killed for me?" You know, and making the kid just feel awful when the kid already was scared to death because she'd just been saved from being run over. And the mother, in her frustration, gives the child the feeling that the child is not wanted, that the child is stupid, the child is no good. Well, no. It takes forever, if ever, for a child to get over that, to get over that abandonment and frustration of the parent. And so, if and as these things happen in the lives of people, and I'm aware of them, we work on getting them balanced up. And they balance out very nicely. Now, you don't know, all of you, you don't know what limitations you have in your mind. You don't know what limitations you have in your subconscious mind. You don't know what hang-ups you have. And I'm saying this very seriously. You don't know what hang-ups you have. You just don't know. Until you look at the world about you. And the thing in the world about you that bugs the living daylights out of you, that's your problem. If you look at the world and you see it needing improvement, that's you. Because if you were a happy, genius person, you would see no world needing improvement. If you fell in love with your spouse, or with a man or woman, you fell in love with them and you wanted to get married to them, and you wanted to change them, you know, even as you're falling in love with them, you're wrong. Because what made you love them are the very things you want to change. What made you love them are the very wonderful things about their spirit, about their free spirit, about their ability to be themselves and have fun. And you want to put them into the box that your parents had told you was so important. And you see, so if you look around you, you have a good barometer of where you are on the position of life. So when you look around you and you see anybody that needs to be corrected or changed, then that's you. And if instead of correcting them and changing them, you say to yourself, hey, they're being themselves and having fun. You know, it's none of my business. They're being themselves and having fun. If they're in my world and I want them in my world, then I better accept the fact that that's how they are. Being themselves and having fun. Well, you mean, if you do this, you will not create in your world people who are not harmonious with you. You understand that? You will not create people in your world that you love and care about and want in your world that are not harmonious, not even your family. Your family are perfect. They're wonderful. But don't you judge them. The minute you judge them, they're not perfect anymore. They're not wonderful. They have improvements to be made. And if they have improvements to be made, they're no fun. They're no fun at all. So we want to really be on top of these things, because if we're not, we're going to let those subconscious thoughts destroy us and control us and manipulate us and keep us from experiencing all the good that our life is. Now, do you want all the good that your life is? Oh, yes, 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 yes. No, you don't. No, you don't. Do you watch television? Naughty, naughty. Why naughty, naughty? Because you watch television, which tells you the news and tells you stories and tells you the life histories of people, and you set about instantly to judge them. And because you set about instantly to judge them, then as you judge them, you put them in a case that says to you that they are not good or good. If you judge anything, good or not good, what you are doing is you're judging. And we don't ever dare judge. We like a person because they're harmonious with us. And we don't like a person because they're not harmonious with us. We are the masters of our world. We are the creators of our world. We are the ones who build everything into our world. So now you have in your body the subconscious mind, the subconscious aspect of it. And this subconscious aspect is what we can work with. It's like the stem cells waiting to be told what to do. The subconscious is waiting to be told what to do. How do we tell our subconscious what to do and what we want done? By affirmation, by meditation, by learning to go within. So, you want to meditate, and you want to meditate and put your life in balance, put your world in balance. Okay, how do you put your world in balance? You put your world in balance by first putting yourself in balance. I say to everyone, if you're going to take a nap in the middle of the day for 10 minutes to a half hour, if you're going to go to bed at night, whatever, as you lay your head on the pillow, as you lay down, the first thing you say to yourself is, I am peace. I am peace. I am peace. And you just say, I am peace, and you'll drift off with the most beautiful dreams you could ever imagine. You say, I am peace, and everything in your world is harmonious and joyful and wonderful. When you say, I am peace, everything you do is good. All the things you think about are good. Now, if you watch a news report, and they're talking about some unhappiness in the news, in the world, somewhere, it's usually pretty far away from where you are. If you're judging that, you're making yourself the judge and the jury. You're making yourself responsible for an attitude about what you see. And being responsible for an attitude about what you see or hear is not really your responsibility. You're not responsible for a war in Afghanistan, except if you think the war is in Afghanistan, you're creating it. If you say all is in divine order, then you're creating that. And there is no war. There is no war. And if you don't believe me, go over there and check. And you'll find, just like the soldiers who write about it when they get home, it was like we're just in our own backyard. It's just when the landmines went off or the other people came over and had guns, only that was only a few moments. They call them skirmishes. They had only a few skirmishes. They were there for 2 or 3 years. They had 5 skirmishes. Of course, the 5 skirmishes could kill them if they were not careful. But they didn't need to have the 5 skirmishes. How could they have been there without 5 skirmishes? All is in divine order. There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. We are the masters of these situations. We are the masters of everything that we do. And when we put the cause in motion, we get the results. We get the experience of peace. We get the experience of harmony. We get the experience of right action. That's what it's all about. And when I say, there now is peace on earth and begin with me, began with me, people laugh sometimes. And when they laugh, I say, if you're talking to some children who are playing and they're playing not kindly with one another, and you say, peace, 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 just peace. And you look at the children and say, peace. What happens to the children? They mellow out. When you walk into the room, does peace reign?
Yes.
When you walk into a situation that is volatile, that is might start a fire or something. When you walk into the room, what happens? Everybody forgets what they were doing and goes about doing normal things. It's so wonderful how powerful we are and how little we realize how powerful we are, because we really are powerful. We really can put a cause in motion for bringing about magnificent things in our life. And it's up to us to do it now. Now, when do you want to do it? When do you want to start that?
Now.
right now. Now, we've read here in our statement here, it says very clearly, another technique in learning to listen within to achieve inner peace and wisdom. I sit in calmness on the dramatic seashore or in the quietness of a park-like area or gurgling stream and let its noisy confusion claim my attention. We let ourselves be drifted away by some things that are just wonderful and beautiful and perfect. And when we allow that to happen, then we are free. Then we are totally free. But we cannot let it drift away. We cannot let it happen unless we ourselves are in charge. Unless we ourselves make sure what it is that we put in our consciousness. Now, what are you putting in your consciousness? Are you listening to the radio? Are you listening to the news? Are you watching television? Are you putting those things in your mind? Are you thinking these things? Well, then you'll be like everybody else. Well, I want to be like everybody else. No, you don't. You want to be more than that. That's why you're here. You want to be all that you are. Are you the peacemaker? Are you the person that brings joy, peace, harmony, and goodness to everyone's life, especially your own family? Yes, I would think so. Are you the kind of person that looks at the world and says, I like this world? Yes. I know you do, don't you? Mm-hmm. And how is your class in school? All the children look at you and say, wow, what a teacher we got.
Oh, yeah.
See? See, now, she goes into pre-prescribed program. She goes into her class, but before she goes in there, what does she say? All is in divine order. All is in divine order. And then she walks in there, and what does she find? All in divine order. Your class is the same way, right? You're still teaching, aren't you? Yeah. So, when you walk into your class, you don't say, oh my God, this class is a terror. They're always messing up. They're doing dumb things. If you say that, you compound it. You give
yes,
it power.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, before you enter the classroom, just stop a minute and say, all is in divine order. I am the master of my soul. I'm master of my consciousness. The captain of life. Myself. Always. And poof. Whatever confusion might have been there is not there. But also, for you too, and everyone else who's a teacher, you want them to be able to understand what you're teaching and know it. You want to be able to teach them what you're teaching them and have them go home and instantly remember it and know it and use it and love it. Because if they don't, they'll forget it. And when they forget it, then it's lost. But since you have that power, you have that ability to say those things, you have that ability to do those things, then do it, right? You can do it. You can do it. It's up to you. And nobody else can take it from you, and nobody else can add it to you. Now, we have this consciousness about us, and you know it, from head to toe. But yet, if I were to say to you this stupid thing, Christy, tell me what that thing is on the back of the calf of your leg.
All in divine order.
Huh?
All is in divine order.
Christy, don't say that. What should you say, if I may help you? I say, Christy, what is that thing on the calf of the back of your, on the back of your leg? You say, you know, Herb, I have a total body, and I have no idea of any parts of it. I'm not conscious of any part of my body. I touch my hand, I'm conscious of it. But I'm not I am totally unconscious of any area of my body. It is operating perfectly, smoothly, wonderfully, without any attention from me. And on the back of my calf, which one? Which one? And you see, you don't know. Because you have no idea what's going on in and on your body. You might hear a fly go by, but otherwise not. And you see, we don't know. Now, the blessing of that is that all of our body is operating under the autonomic nervous system doing its proper thing, all of our body. But all of our body also is ready for whatever input we want to put in it. You take your hand and you say, oh, wow, oh, wow, what's this dirt here? My goodness, oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow. Oh, wow, what beautiful skin I have. I have ideal complexion. I have ideal skin. Every organ, action, function of my body is... Do you ever go crazy like that? Do you ever go crazy like that? You should. Every morning when you get up, before you even get out of bed, go over your body and say, oh, what a beautiful body. Oh, have your organ, action, function be so perfect. Oh, I had an ideal skin, and I had the ideal this, I have the ideal. Do that. And what happens? That's what you experience. That's what you experience. And if you don't do that, you're wasting a wonderful opportunity. Because at that moment, your body is just waking up. It doesn't even know it's there yet. It's just waiting for you to tell it how wonderful it is, and how beautiful it is, and how fantastic it is. And do that. Do that. But be very careful. Be very careful. If you listen to someone like me, and then you judge that person and say they have a scratchy voice, or they have this, or they have that, my goodness sake, my goodness sake. I wonder where that came from. I wonder what reflection of me that is. What reflection? What thought? Well, you see, when you are your ideal self, you don't even know it. See, when you're like the Christ, he says, what wouldst thou of me? I am the Christ. I can only see you perfect. So you want me to see you perfect, or what's the problem? And you see, he didn't see it. And we can do that too. We can look at our bodies, we can look at the world around us and see it perfect. Pollyanna, yeah, to a degree, but we look and we see everything perfect. And when we see everything perfect, what happens? It is that way for us. It is that way easily and perfectly. And it is that way in a wonderful manner, and it's powerful. It's in that way for such a beautiful way that we just never realize how great it is. And it is good. Okay. Let's see if we have time for a few more. No, we don't. So, let's put that in motion. Let's sit by a burbling brook or a stream or go in the park. Right around here, so many beautiful park benches right in your own little park. You can go sit there and nobody's using them. And you just sit there and just meditate. Nobody will disturb you. If someone sees you sitting there, they'll go around. They go away from you. They don't want to disturb you. And they know that you're doing some good work. Just sit and meditate and say, all in divine order. Don't go to sleep. Just sit and meditate and say, all is in divine order. I'm happy. I'm filled with power. I'm filled with light. I'm filled with love. And then, if you wish, you can start with your family, naming them one by one, and seeing each one of them perfect, seeing each one of them wise, seeing each one of them doing things to their benefit, seeing each one of them as the happiest person on earth. That's great. That's great. But you have that opportunity. And as you have that opportunity and take that opportunity, beautiful things take place in your life. And that's all that matters. So, with that, we'll take a pause now, and then we'll come back for questions. So if you have any questions, write them down. If they're about today's talk, fine. If they're about something else, fine. Just write them down so we have something to share in our talk time. I love you.
I love you.